Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
Good morning. Yeah. Okay, new microphones, which we're really happy about. Yeah. I'm Cindy Clay. I'm a prayer practitioner here and a ministerial student. Yay. And I just want to let you know that there are so many ways that the practitioners are here to support you. We love to pray. And you can see there's a list of things up here. If you have a prayer request, you can write it out and put it in the little pottery jar we call a prayer vessel in the back. You can go to the website. You can come to morning prayer at 7 a.m. We'll wait for you. And lots of ways to surround your life with prayer. So I just invite you right now to turn within. As we just breathe. Breathe in the presence of the One. I feel the love, the joy, the excitement. I feel the energy of high spirits and high spirit. And I know that we come together in this community this morning as one, as the dearly beloved of the One. It feels so good to be in that presence and to be sharing it with new people, familiar people, and our ministerial candidate, Reverend Abigail, and the glorious music from our musicians. I just know that the message is going to be perfect for each one of us. I know the music is filling our hearts. I am so glad to open this service with this awareness of the divine presence of love. I say thank you, sweet spirit, and so it is.
It is my joy to give a kind of a medium-length introduction to Reverend Abigail, because some of you haven't yet met her, and so this is our opportunity today to hear a little bit about her background from me, to watch her give a talk, and then this afternoon to play with her in a workshop. So it's a good full day. So let's begin. Reverend Abigail found her first home in Science of Mind at San Jose, California, and that was in the year 2000. She became a licensed practitioner there in 2004 and then spent the next several years serving in a wide variety of ministries. And then she got called to become a minister. So in 2011, she got her first position as a staff minister at San Jose CSL. And she did a variety of things. I'll give you a sense of what they were. The Connecting and Belonging Ministries, which essentially is a small group ministry. The Sister Spirit Retreat, the Women's Ministry, the Vision Corps, and creating the Wednesday night service, so a midweek service. And then she heard even a deeper call, and this time was to found a center. So she founded the Center for Spiritual Living Peninsula, which is in Red City, California. Redwood City, California, where she served as senior minister and director from 2012 to 2018. And during this time, she left her full-time position at Stanford University to devote herself fully to ministry. So under her leadership, that community grew in vitality and diversity and sustainability, and established an endowment fund to ensure the future of the center. In 2018, she joined the ministerial team at the CSL in Seattle. Now, Seattle is one of the largest CSL communities in the world, and she served there until March 2025. So over those 7 years, she helped multiple roles, including assistant and associate minister, education director, minister in charge of practitioners, lead for the Thrive Stewardship Campaign, where she raised more than $1 million annually. She became known for speaking and teaching and inclusive leadership and her ability to empower practitioners and congregants alike in their spiritual truth. So moving beyond local ministry, Reverend Abigail also co-founded and led retreats like Sister Spirit. That's an annual women's retreat that's now in its 18th year. She also worked with the Next Generation Retreat, which is to support young adults, so young adults in their 20s and 30s, in their spiritual growth. She served the larger organization of Centers for Spiritual Living, mentoring new ministers, sponsoring ordinations, and co-chairing the CSL Global Retreat events. So her ministry is both heart-centered and visionary. She's passionate about creating communities of authentic belonging, where diversity and inclusion are embraced as spiritual values. She draws on spirituality and modern science and psychology to make teachings both practical and transformative. She helps both individuals and communities to awaken to their fullest potential. So please join me in welcoming Reverend Abigail to CSL Bellingham.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you. And welcome to all the people who are online. I know I have a lot of friends. Hi, Mom. I know my mom is watching too, so got to say hi to her. She's in New Mexico. And thank you all for coming, those near and far. I know I have friends who came from Canada and down to Tacoma and everywhere in between. So thank you, thank you, thank you for your support. And I'm going to start with something maybe a little uncomfortable, but in the end, my hope is that there will be a transformation. So in the beginning, I want you to imagine separation, isolation, not belonging. Have you ever felt that feeling? Have you ever felt that when you were watching the news? Have you ever had a feeling that our world is unraveling? Not a great feeling. Yeah. Anybody in the room felt that recently? Maybe? Okay. All right. Well, I have an ancient story that is perfect for this modern moment. It's a Persian story by a 12th century Sufi poet named Farid Uddin Attar. It's called The Conference of the Birds. He wrote it specifically for people, spiritual seekers in difficult times. And it starts off this way, where all the birds in the world felt this feeling of isolation. They felt that there was something underneath going on that was disturbing. They felt alone, they felt siloed, and they thought, there is a solution. What if we all get together and we find the Seamorg? Now in this tale, the mythical Seamorg is the king of the universe. And so they all got together, all the birds, all the different types of birds, and they started flying together, knowing they knew where this mythical place was, but nobody had ever been there. So they start flying together, and there are valleys, and there's difficult weather, and there's all kinds of challenges. There's seven big, difficult experiences that all these birds go through, and one by one, people start giving up. One by one, the birds start giving up, and they start recognizing that their numbers are dwindling and dwindling, but there's a core group of birds, 30 birds. They make it to this mythical place. And whenever they all land, they notice the king, the Seamorg, is not there. But when they look, they've landed on the edge of a beautiful lake that's clear as glass, and they see their reflection. And in that moment, they realize they are the Seamorg. They are the Seamorg. And their oneness and their unity and their willingness to come together for a brighter idea is what made it possible for them to see that the thing they were seeking was already a part of them. That they were the solution. And the only way they could have done it is if they did it together. I love this story, and I built my talk based on this story because it has spiritual points that are so relevant to today. And it's something that we need to hear. It's not just a pleasant parable. It's our journey. It offers three truths about our soul's grand opening. And that's what my talk title was, Your Soul's Grand Opening. Hopefully it was a good hook. You came, so thank you. Part one, done. The first point is you must choose to begin. Sounds simple, but it's not. You must choose to begin. Your new beginning doesn't rely on the world changing, but it relies on you changing. You have to choose to make a difference internally in order for an external result to show up. This is where I bring in my favorite thing, which is quantum physics. The theory of superposition. Oh, you're what is it? Okay, superposition means a particle exists in all possible states at the same time until an observer observes it, and then it collapses into one reality. Think of it this way. If you were like a coin spinning in the air, you'd have heads and tails at the same time going on, right? You toss a coin, all is available, heads and tails. And then you toss it, you catch it, and then there's its heads or tails, right? But in the air, it was heads and tails. But this is like us. We have the opportunity to focus on fear or courage, animosity and hatred or compassion. It's like we exist in these multiple states of opportunity until we choose and we collapse on one reality, and that determines where this physical reality moves forward. But all possibilities exist in us. We have this opportunity to be of choice and choose to move forward in a certain way. It's not always easy. But what do you dream? What do you think is necessary? What would you love? Would you be willing to be that person that brings that forth into existence? Ernest Holmes says, and Ernest Holmes, by the way, is the founder of Centers for Spiritual Living, which is the teaching you're here experiencing at this very moment. Ernest Holmes said, the thing we call God is a living and dynamic spirit. It is the principle of all life and truth and beauty. This infinite principle of all life and truth and beauty is also the infinite field of possibility. And we get to be the microcosm, the mini creators of the great creator expressing and creating into reality what we would love. But what do we choose? What would it look like to consciously observe the humanity in somebody you disagree? I have a really relevant example. So let's talk about the terrible murder of Charlie Kirk. This man spoke specifically against the gay community, expressing opposition to same-sex marriage, and suggesting that the Bible verse, Leviticus 20:13, which endorses the execution of homosexuals, serves as God's perfect law when it comes to sexual manners. Now, I'm gay, so this is a relevant experience for my own personal life. And I thought I would do a little bit of research. So one thing, when there's something that's different than me, somebody who's different than me, instead of just taking what is, what if I research and find my own experience? So I looked up one of his sermons, and he was vivacious. He was really, really enthusiastic, very, very clear on his teachings, very clear. And I thought, well, what's the difference? Because he comes from a very conservative Christian perspective, and I come from Centers for Spiritual Living. I teach about our science of mind, and one of our main teachings is about love. And one of the other main teachings is about oneness, that we're all part of it. So Charlie Kirk is part of the oneness that I am. And I found it really interesting. So one of the things that he talked about, which is different than here, is he talked about Satan. And he said, Satan is a real experience. It is a real entity. This is a real thing. Don't ever question it. And then he said, when you question things, you're following Satan and you don't have faith. So just for those of you who are new to this teaching, by the way, that we don't teach anything about Satan. We actually don't believe that there's Satan. Just so you, there is an experience. This is our version. There is an experience of being connected to the infinite source, which is love, or not being connected. And the truth is, you can never not be connected, but you can experience and act as if you're not connected. And so when I am not feeling connected to love, for instance, or to the source, or to God, or to spirit, when I'm not feeling connected to love, I might act in a certain way that is harmful. For instance, I might want people to turn against each other. I might want to sow doubts in your mind about yourself. I might mock you if I were feeling disconnected from the love that I am. Now, this is where Charlie Kirk and I kind of teach the same thing. He was saying that the devil's tricks are turning people against each other, sowing doubts in your mind, and mocking you. And I thought that was really interesting and fascinating. So in that case, our teachings or our belief system about how the world works are similar. He's just saying the devil, and I'm saying it's when you're disconnected from your love and your source. Very, very similar. However, I'm also a gay person who knows that I am in love with my wife, and that that my choice of being a same gendered loving woman is not actually a choice. It's kind of how I grew up. It's who I am. It's a part of me. It wasn't something that I had an inherent choice, just as anybody who's straight had an inherent choice in their straightness. It is what it is. And I believe I was born this way, and I was born perfect exactly as I am. Thank you. So here's the deal. Just because Charlie Kirk had an opposing view for me does not mean he deserves what he got. Because I teach from a teaching of love, and every single person deserves to be love. And I know the people who are hurt, hurt other people. That hurt is the genesis or not feeling loved. That is the thing that causes people to continue this thing in reality that harms others. And in order for me to take a stand for love, I take a stand for Charlie Kirk. I do. And my choice is to love him. Can I be a place where love shows up even when somebody speaks against me? Can I be a place where love shows up even when they're doing something I don't like? It doesn't mean I have to take it. It doesn't mean I have to accept it. It just means, can I love them? Isn't that what Jesus was talking about? I'm just saying, for those of you Christians in the room who was brought up with Jesus, his message was about love. That was his big message. So my encouragement to you is to choose to begin to be a place of love. Now, how that looks, we have a couple of good examples here. When you're scrolling through social media and you find a very challenging thread, go ahead and look for the humanizing comment on the thread and encourage that person or compliment that person or say yes or thumbs up it. Very simple. At a family gathering, let me guess, is there anybody in the room who has differing points with their family? Just saying. Okay, at a family gathering, listen beneath their opinion for their fears or their longings. It's a challenging spiritual practice. But if you came here, maybe you're up for the challenge. Maybe you're a person who's willing to take a stand for love in an uncomfortable way. The second point, be courageous. Be courageous. Now, I know that any journey requires spiritual courage. The valleys that the birds cross, their doubts, their fears, some of them gave up because they didn't think it was possible to find that thing that they were searching for. But courage can be cultivated. Courage does not mean that. Courage means, here, I'm just going to say, Brené Brown. Brené Brown defines courage as showing up and being seen with no guarantee of the outcome. This is your soul's grand opening, to show up in alignment with your highest truth. So some of you don't know, but my cousin-in-law, who is 3 years younger than me, my cousin's husband died suddenly, the same day that Charlie Kirk was murdered. And I found out about this. My cousin lost her mom in February, my aunt and her dad in September of 2023. So she was living with her mom and dad and husband in this house, and her husband died. So I went to Arizona to visit her, just to spend time, because I love her so deeply. And when I was flying back home, I was like, what are all these people carrying these signs? And the signs were like, this is our turning point. This is our, because apparently Charlie Kirk's memorial had taken place in Phoenix the day before I was flying home. So I was flying home on a Monday, the memorial was on a Sunday. And so I was like, oh, what is all this? What are all these people? And they were like really, really sweet and wonderful and vibrant and friendly. And they were like, all of them had their signs in my airplane. And I was like, what is this turning point? What is this? Oh, that's Charlie Kirk's ministry. I was on a plane filled with people who were returning to Seattle from Phoenix, Arizona, who had attended this amazing experience. And that was just, it was just an interesting place. And I noticed my uncomfortability. I noticed that. And so I'm sitting in front of me. There's this lady who was like, oh my God, this was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I was there at 3 o'clock in the morning, and we had a stadium and it had an overflow stadium. And one of the things she said, which I thought was amazing, is that Charlie Kirk's wife forgave the shooter. Yeah. And I love that she was talking about that. That's what she was talking about. What a miracle that is. How hard that is. And I completely agree. And so she was in the row in front of me, and then there was this other couple, and then they started talking, and they both live in Snohomish County, and they both go to the same church, and they were just like really excited to see each other. And so then, of course, the guy next to me who's been talking to her turns to me and says, "What's your profession?" And I'm like... I'm a minister. Where do you go to church? Because, you know, they were talking about their church. And I was like, "Oh, well, I go to Center for Spiritual Living." He's like, "What's that?" Well, it's an interdenominational faith teaching that teaches the string of truth that runs through all the religions. And it's based on love. And he's like, "Oh, that's great." Brené Brown, courage is showing up and being seen with no guarantee of the outcome. My wife has done the same thing. My wife had, when she first started, before she started working at Stanford, she went through the interview process. And during the interview process, two things she did that were very courageous. Number one, she came out in the interview. Now, for anybody who is LGBTQIA, that is very uncomfortable to come out publicly whenever you're interviewing at a job because you just never know. You just never know. So she came out at her job, and then she had this experience where after the interview, she felt like she actually messed up really badly. She went back and she called me on the phone. I said, "How'd it go?" She said, "It went terrible." And I was working at Stanford at the time, and my boss, I was actually having lunch with my boss. And my boss was like, "Tell her to call them back." And I was like, "Really?" She said, "Yes, tell her to call them back and let them know." And so I told Gina, "Call them back." And Gina did it. She called them back. And she said, "You know what, I really messed up this part, and I was really nervous, and I was really scared, and this is what I really meant. And I just wanted you to know that this means a lot to me. I really want this job." And so she told them how she felt. Now, lo and behold, they had narrowed it down to two candidates, and instead of hiring one, they ended up hiring both candidates, and one of them was Gina. Yeah. That's why I married her. She's amazing. She's also a mega introvert, so if you mob her after this talk, I'm sorry, Gina, I love you anyway. I mean, one of the things that I was doing, this is like a little example, a little bit of me, just so you know. My best friend Becky and I, when we were 18, we loved going to goth night. There was like an 18 and over dance like party that was like goth night. And it was so cool because you get to like put all your black clothes on. I made like spider webs on my face, and I had like dark eyeliner, black lipstick. It was so cool. And so we go to goth night. Becky's like, "I have an idea." And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "I have 150 smiley face stickers. Let's hand them out." Like, okay. All right. So here we are with the smiley face stickers of goth, which is supposed to be morose and sad and, you know, sentimental. And I was like, "Okay, we're just handing out these smiley face. Do you want a smiley face sticker?" And then all of a sudden they go, "Yeah, thank you. You want a smiley face sticker? Yeah, that's awesome." The whole club was filled with goth people and yellow smiley face stickers all over the place. So one of the things about neuroplasticity in our brains, so that's our brains can be rewired. Our brains can be rewired through intentional thought. Our brains can be rewired. Remember the coin toss? And, you know, you can have a choice to think something new, to do something new. But Fear is triggers your amygdala. Courage is sparked when your prefrontal cortex chooses a new response. So each time you act in spite of your fear, a courageous act, dopamine reinforces new neural pathways that are in alignment with your action. And that means that you don't have to wait to feel brave. If you act bravely, things will happen to you. You will feel better. If you act bravely, the effect will be you feeling peace, calm, and getting a little dopamine hit on the top of it. So I encourage you to think about yourself. What would compassion look like, especially somebody you disagree with? What would a grand opening be about yourself? What about yourself is limiting your courage, and can you create a new thought or a new idea, a new possibility, and act in alignment with it? So my encouragement for you is to speak your truth, even when fear urges silence, to forgive somebody who has not apologized, to say no to what violates your own values, and to choose to not to gossip, but offer kindness instead. So the last thing I want to encourage, the third message of the birds, is to know that we are love in action. The birds that landed on that pond had to look across and see not only in themselves, but that they had taken an action that was about love. They had taken an action about, I am feeling uncomfortable with this isolation, with this situation, and I want to be in a new place. And I am seeking that thing which they thought was outside of them, but it was actually inside of them the whole time. And I can tell you that love is the answer. Love is a place of action. In that poem, the Sea Morgue wasn't a trophy. It was a reflection of who they truly are. And each and every one of you has that same truth. So what I want you to do is just do a quick little exercise. I want you to take a moment and feel love in your heart. Breathe it in and breathe it out. Okay, this time when you feel love, I want you to breathe it in and allow that love to wash over your body. Breathe it in. Breathe it out. And now I want you to do something even greater. I want you to breathe in that love. And when you breathe it out, I want you to imagine that it's washing over this entire community. And breathe it out. And one more time, breathe in the love. And now I want you to breathe it out and imagine it flows over the entire world. And now open your eyes. And I want you to just take a moment and imagine that we are those birds. We are the Sea Morgue. We are the connected place of knowing that what lies outside of us is actually the thing that we're seeking, is actually what lies within us. And I want you to look from the eyes of love just around at the other people that are in this room. Just take a moment, just eye to eye, just for a brief second. For those of you online, I see you. I see you. I don't know which video camera. There's three of them here. I see all of you. If you're with somebody, look at the person next to you. And I'd like to close with a story about Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He talks about this word Ubuntu, which is a South African principle meaning I am because we are. He told a story where there was a bunch of children and they were told to race for a basket of fruit. And whoever got the fruit won, whoever got there first won the prize. Now, I'm just going to say, I know what our American children would do. I'm just making up a story, but imagine in your head what the American children would do. I know what I would have done as a kid. Okay, these kids, instead of competing, they held hands and ran together. And they all got to the fruit at the same time. And when asked why, they said, well, if I got to it, then the rest of them would be sad. That's because they embodied the spirit of Ubuntu, of love in action. I am because we are. And so this truth is not just an African truth. It echoes across cultures. It is a truth that we can find here. And also, I'm going to end with a Mexican proverb, because it is a National Hispanic Month. I want to apologize to all the Spanish speakers in the room, including my wife. Cuando compartimos la alegría, se multiplica. Cuando compartimos la tristeza, se divide, which means, when we share joy, it multiplies. When we share sorrow, it is divided. So know today that your simple acts of love ripple outward. Remember to choose to begin. Remember to be courageous. And remember to be love in action. And if you do, I promise you, this is going to be a beautiful world. It's the world that I want to live in. And so it is.